This is the June 10 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find and listen to the whole of our program online anytime you'd like. Our panelists for the day are Bill Biederman at AgMarket.net, Andy Wald at ProducersHedge.com, and Mike Zuzla at GlobalComResearch.com. Again, find Commodity Week anytime you'd like online at WILLAG.com. .org. Let's start by getting a few words from Andy Wald. He's at ProducersHedge.com. Andy, tell me a little bit about yourself and the company and where you are in Illinois, please.
Yeah, Producers Hedge is a brokerage firm that I started in 2017. We're in northern Illinois, a little town of Leland, about 70 miles west of Chicago. We've got branches in Lancaster, Kentucky, Moorhead, Minnesota, Eldora, Iowa, and Oakland, Nebraska. I was in the grain business for about 15 years as a manager at an independent co-op and saw a need to get out and work with producers to help them on the grain marketing on the cash side as well as brokerage, and that was the reason we formed the business. Since then, we've added those offices. And we've got quite a nice little network across the Midwest where we can talk about the weather and different things going on.
In fact, I believe you made some visits to the offices in Iowa and further to the west this week. Can you tell me about that trip? Not the offices, but what the crops look like?
Sure. Tuesday I headed out to Oakland, Nebraska from here in Leland. Went west from Mendota, 92, to the Quad Cities. I thought that crop looked pretty good, but of course we had some showers Monday night, and first thing in the morning, things are going to look good. Getting on I-80 and heading across Iowa, I thought maybe the crop looked a little uneven and behind. Definitely some moisture stress or heat stress. Getting into eastern Nebraska, Blair, and up into Oakland, I thought the crop looked pretty good, but you know they've been catching some rains out there. Coming home, I came across Route 20 all the way across Iowa from Sioux City to Dubuque, and you know really I was expecting the crop to look a little tougher, but overall I thought it looked pretty good. Definitely, there's moisture deficit looking, you know, with the ditches and the grass. Things was kind of yellowing up, kind of had more of that late July, early August look. So definitely some moisture concerns there. With the heat, I think they're going to be looking for some rains. From there, drive down to Route 30, come into Clinton, into Illinois and across to home. And you know, this is kind of the afternoon, and crop's about knee-high here. Some of the corn was rolling up a little bit, and definitely all those areas in need of a drink.
Let's pick up where we normally would in our Commodity Week program and get a list of items we probably should discuss for the day. Bill Biederman, I'll start with you. I know we should have the USDA WASDE figures on the list, probably the CONAB numbers that were released this morning too. What else should be on our discussion list for this afternoon?
Well, I think we're going to need to drive down into those numbers to see what's believable and what's maybe price management, if you want to call it that. Other than that, you know, really it's going to come down to what kind of acres we have and what is our yield potential given the conditions and the weather that we have before us. And I think that's going to actually drive some of the demand numbers too. So I think we're looking at a dynamic that many have not seen before. And people who've been in the business as long as I have, I've been professionally trading for 42 years, and my first commodity account was in 1976 when I started farming in 73 and thought I needed to hedge. So I've been around a long time, but I've seen maybe about five times in that whole career that come close to this, and maybe only one or two that really do come close to this. But that'll depend on the next few weeks.
Mike Zuzalo, on your list to discuss for the day?
Well, I think the spreads are starting to telegraph or suggest some important things, Todd, that we want to be on the lookout for. And I also think inflation data out of China and out of the United States might be able to help the commodity hedgers, whether they're cattlemen or whether they're looking to sell grain at some future date.
Andy Wald, I know that this is your first time up. Do you have a list of things that you might want to take up, or are there issues that are top of mind for you?
Well, the issue at the top of my mind right now is weather and what the potential of this crop is. You know, I think the potential is there, but things are going to have to really, the weather's going to have to really cooperate to get it. You know, like Bill said, the price management, I guess, of these numbers that they release, you know, and what's going to happen June 30th with our planted acreage and what we can expect are all things that need to be looked at.
Well, Bill, I want to start with you. What's believable out of the USDA figures that were released today, old and new crop?
What I'm looking at in corn is, you know, they put the carryover estimate at 1357. That wasn't unbelievable, I guess. But what is unbelievable is the export number, both old crop and new crop. Because if you look at this and if you jump over to the world trade data, and you see what they put for the Brazilian crop at 98.5. Now, granted, that was a really good revision down from 102 to 98.5 for the USDA to make. But, you know, CONAB's at 96.5, and they're just as bad as you know, well, I shouldn't say that. They tried just as hard as USDA to be right. But most of the trade industry people who are buying cash grain and selling cash grain are between 89 and 95. So if USDA gets below 96, that's kind of the key number. Right now, Russia, Ukraine, Romania, and Bulgaria can make up the difference in corn lost production in South America down to 96. Anything below 96 has to come to the U.S. or has to totally ration out of the equation. There's not enough substitute feed grains to ration that, so that means that unless you're killing those livestock, you're going to have to buy U.S. corn. And we believe it is below 96. We think it's between 90 and 95. We're not quite below 90 like some of our competitors are. But bottom line is this. We're looking at 300 to 400 million bushel that's going to have to be worked into these numbers. And if you look at what USDA did last year, you know, our export number right now for old crop corn is 2850, 2.8 billion bushels. Last year, USDA started at 2.15. 700 million bushel miss. And their estimate for this coming year is 2.45. It's 400 million bushel below what we're looking at now. And if I'm looking at these numbers the way I'm looking at them in the world, you're probably looking at revisions up. Now, some of that would kick in August, some September, and then, you know, like Brazil stopped selling last year in July. We think that they'll stop again this year, sometime in July, for sure by August. So that's going to give us one to two months of old crop demand, which means that 2850 number has to come up. But it leaves another 300 million bushel where we have to push it into new crop. So this 2450 number is just unbelievably low. If I just change that to 2700, I drop my carryover down to just a little over a billion bushel. And that's using a record yield of 179.5. And honestly, I'd like to hear the other panelists. I just don't think nationwide we have a record yield. I don't even know if we have a yield close to last year. I'm really would like to hear everybody else's thoughts on that.
Well, let's give them a chance to do that. I think we'll start with Mike Zuzulo. And Mike, maybe you can help me to address some of the numbers that were released from CONAB this morning. And I'm thinking about their export number, which dropped substantially from 1.378 million tons to 1.161. I think that's 217 million bushels. USDA clearly did not address that in new crop, although they changed old crop some.
Yeah, I agree with Bill. I haven't gone through the numbers as deeply as he has at this point, but I think the trend is your friend when it comes to the corn versus the beans, because no matter how you slice this report, the corn and the market has woken up to it. The corn supply competition is nil at this point. Governments are going to do everything they can to knock the prices down. We've seen that in China. We saw it today with Mexico saying they weren't going to take GMO corn. I'd like to know how they're going to substitute that. But I think this is where the writing is kind of on the wall unless there's a major conflict that corn gets caught in the middle of between, say, the United States and China or the United States and Mexico, that it's going to be very, very difficult to cut demand at this stage, especially U.S. demand. And I think the trade's picked up on that. And this goes and dovetails into the spread action. Notice the July NOV bean spread is down to 84 cents, and the July Dease corn spread is up to 84 cents. We're down to levels in that bean spread that we haven't seen for about 6 months, and the corn is holding in there very, very firm. And I think part of that is because of the weaker basis in the soybeans, and that's even with record prices in the soybean oil. So I really think that you can, I don't want to say trust the market, but I think the market indicators are accurate, and it's very rare that we can say that the spreads are accurate, that the soybeans we have more competition in. The higher the beans go, the more we're going to get supplies that come in and competition that come in to Wilmington. Now to the yield side, I mean, we are, I think, right on the verge of a 2012 in terms of what my recollection is. I mean, this seems a lot like Iowa is in the center of the issue, whereas Indiana was in the center of the issue back in 2012. So it could even be worse in 2012, depending on the rainfall the next 10 days. But when you have 65% of the corn in drought after today's weekly update and 64% of the beans in drought in the state of Iowa, and then you're in the upper 80s to 90s in Michigan, Minnesota, and South Dakota, it's really going to be tough to get a 175 yield out of this national crop. And I think it's going to be really tough to get a 50 bushel yield in the soybeans. And I think that number could drop pretty dramatically in 2 weeks from now.
Andy Wold, you've seen a lot of the crop in the last week. Is it a 179.5 at this point?
I think you're going to be pushing it pretty hard to get to that 179.5. You know, if we're anywhere between what last year's crop is and that, you know, I think it's going to be pretty tough to be building any type of stocks. I like Bill's number at the 2.7 on the export side. And, you know, if you take a look at what acres could increase and then you drop back that yield, I still think we're going to have a hard time growing our carryout.
Yeah, so I was going to address that actually with Bill in this next question, which is USDA probably looking forward to the acreage report and is always very cautious. So 179.5 times current acreage versus whatever a lower yield might be, if that's what they use, times the expected acreage we could see at the end of June. Production is production, total number of bushels. I take it you just don't think that number is going to be as big as it is now at this point. Is that correct? So you just aren't of the mind that the production this year, even with extra acres, is going to be as big as what we're showing?
Well, in order to get the kind of carryover they're talking about right now with a reduced yield, just, you know, slightly reduced, let's just go to 176, and with just the one revision up in exports, and I can argue some other ones too, to keep the carryover where they wanted it, we got to have 95 million acres. So that brings me to the second question to hear what everybody has to say. Is it possible? Can we have, I mean, anything's possible with the government, but in reality, out in the countryside, do we have 4 million more acres of corn planted, as well as not losing any soybean acres or still building some soybean acres? Because that needs a record yield, too.
Yeah, so I'll start with an answer, actually, on that one that comes from the ag economist on campus, Scott Irwin. Given history, there are about 3 million available acres to be split between the two, so they'd be a million short in his thought process. What are you thinking, Mike Zuzulo?
Yeah, I mean, I find it very hard to get over 93.5 on the corn, especially. I still feel as though way back when that probably a good third, and again, I'd probably play tennis with this one and see what the other guys think, but a good third of the clients I work with probably did not get a solid footing in their chemical prices. And we're caught behind the eight ball on some of their energy prices as well, as far as how much more intensive it was to do the corn this spring by the time we got around to the springtime prices. And so if you hadn't done any bookings in the wintertime when COVID was still red hot and markets were still very, very weak, then it probably was very easy to move towards the soybeans. And I guess this kind of dovetails into the whole aspect of the demand side of the equation, both the demand side of the equation and the potential acreage side of the equation, really could mean next to nothing in 10 days if these weather patterns don't shift, because we are really talking about a crucial area of the country that provides a large stake in the national yield. When you talk about Minneapolis to Sioux Falls to Des Moines, I mean, that's a kind of a golden triangle of where the Western Corn Belt yield comes from, minus the irrigated crops from Nebraska. So I think these things are going to have to be readdressed in 10 days. And I think this goes back to, I don't know if you caught this or not, Todd, but last week you and I, you had asked me a question about the grain stocks report. So I was just, because of that question, going to look at the beginning stocks on today's reports. And they took wheat down 20. They took corn down 150. They took 12% off the beginning stocks for 2021, and then they added 15 to the beans. Here again, I think the spreads are going to be a very good, useful tool, because we're tighter than we ever thought we were heading into that grain stocks report at the end of the month.
Yeah, so I will make note that they made all the changes in the old crop and then changed nothing in new crop. So the change in new crop came from the old crop of less than 150 million bushels that were 75 million export and 75 million ethanol. We'll get to those numbers in just a second. But Andy Wald, we should probably get the acreage figure addressed from you. Can they find 3, 4, 5 million acres combined?
I really think it's going to be tough to find those acres. You know, 3, 3.5 million acres is, you know, I would agree with. You know, I don't think we're going to be able to get the extra corn acres, you know, away from beans. We've seen the trend here, especially in northern Illinois and across Iowa, of planting beans earlier. And you know, usually you'd have, you know, guys planting corn and just want to continue planting. But when they start planting some beans first and you kind of take away that option of continuing to plant more corn. So I just don't think it's all there.
Bill Biederman, you mentioned that we were in a new dynamic at this point, that you've only seen, well, it's a new dynamic, but you've seen five times, you thought, maybe. What is that?
Well, two of those times, we saw a huge increase in demand. One was unexpected. One was actually manipulated. One was when Russia started buying. The other was when we started an ethanol program. And in both those cases, we had the increase in demand followed by a weather problem. Well, this year, we're getting the increase in demand and the weather problem, potential weather problem. I mean, we could still have a great crop, don't get me wrong, but I really believe that demand has bought out what they need to buy for now, and they're sitting on the sideline, and that's why we've seen basis back off. And I think the farmer has sold what he has to sell, and so he's backed off. But what's happened is, you know, the demand side is betting and praying for really good weather, so they don't have to go in and cover their August, September needs just to get out to the new crop. I believe that if we come in, I'm just going to say July 4th, because that the extended forecasts after that are going to give us a good idea. If we come in at that time and there's still a dome pattern, I think this is going to be like a compressed spring, and the demand is just going to come flying out of the gates and try to buy whatever bushels they can buy. I mean, I know I've only got a few end users I work with. Most of it's farmers. That's how they're positioned. They're positioned that, you know, well, we'll get by. We'll have a good crop. But I can tell you that they're very concerned about keeping plants open if they're wrong. And I just see this thing as a puzzle, to where I don't see many ways out of this unless we just are blessed with a massive crop, and the numbers just don't say that. So going back to history, to answer your question, each one of these five times that I've seen, I have not seen one where it's double combined with an inflationary stimulus, not just U.S. economy, world economy, and that world inflationary pressure is going to be impossible, I think, to avoid. It's going to happen. This is a lot like, if you remember, 73-74 Russian purchases, 74 bad crop, and then all through the mid to late 70s, it was an inflationary period. You could buy a farm every 3 years and refinance it at the bank and buy another one. until the late 70s into 1980s, and then we paid the price. And it took a decade to smooth that all out, and it was painful at the end. That's how I see us.
Yeah, the report I just got done doing for clients and subscribers tried to delve into the idea of, A, is this inflation transitory? Is the Federal Reserve believing what they're saying? And they could be very well believing what they're saying right now. But I think between the United States consumer prices that were released today being at the highest since 2008 and the Chinese producer prices being at the highest since 2008, hitting 9% that earlier this week, I think it's safe to say that, in my view, the transitory element is gone out of inflation. It will stick around long enough that the Federal Reserve will need to move on changing their policy. And I'm putting it at the end of the fourth, by the end of the third quarter, first of the fourth quarter, just from a risk management perspective, Todd. And the reason I say that is because the second part of the report delved into how impactful is the Federal Reserve monetary policy on commodities and emerging markets, especially. And it's highly impactful, especially the last 20 years. And so my sense is that if they change their policy, which was the genesis of this whole turn in commodities and this whole turn in inflationary pressure, it was well before the supply side issues became big, well before we came back from COVID. The Federal Reserve changing last August, to me, was a watershed generational shift in their policy that opened the door to buying commodities again. So if they close that door, or partially close that door in the fourth quarter, integrate that into your marketing plan and have hedges in place before they do that.
Andy Wald, what do you think of the discussion?
Well, I can't argue with anything they're saying. You know, it's, you know, we're really just setting up for the perfect storm, whether it's inflation or weather or acres, any of it, you know, demand, the whole works. You know, we're setting up for, you know, something that I've never seen. You know, I got through 2012 as an elevator manager, and remember making, cutting my teeth on $1 million margin calls, I guess. But, you know, it's, this is kind of a new environment, really, and we're just set up to see some major fireworks, I think, especially over the next 6 months to a year. You know, really, even 2 years, this is a two-year problem with the balance sheet until we get it straightened out, at least.
Well, I was going to ask about the following year, not so much about pricing crop. Maybe you'll all want to talk about that. However, I was thinking about the inputs and pricing inputs. And Andy, if you want to talk about that, that's fine. But how is it that producers are being advised by you to manage all of this going forward? It sounds like maybe they should just hang on for a while.
Well, it's a really good question. You know, I've really taken a step back and just advised guys to be patient over the last 6 months. We haven't made a ton of sales. We were out a little bit early, maybe with some sales, just I think like everybody probably was. And you know, it's just things didn't seem right. So we took a step back, and I've advised guys to try to be patient here. It's going to be wild and volatile and that, but I don't want to get out ahead of the skis, I guess. You know, we don't know what our acres are, but you know, I kind of think the stocks might be a little bit tighter than what we think. You know, I haven't really gotten into the numbers, but just kind of talking to elevator managers and producers and seeing where they're at. And, you know, we could see some surprises with that as well. But, you know, it's hard to stare out to Dec 22 and look at 520 or 530 corn and not want to do something about it. And the same with $13 beans. So, but at the same time, I think we need to be careful with it.
Bill Biederman?
I'm saying this with a very, very humble attitude because, you know, so many things can change. But we're 50% sold on corn. But, you know, since last September, we've made sure that we've advised our customers to buy at least as many calls as they are selling bushels. But we're locking in our profit margin right now on the farm I'm looking at is $1,217, locked in. And that's locked in revenue. Inputs are already in the ground. We've got options already bought, so our upside is protected. And if this market, let's just say it goes up to, you know, 750, we're going to be making about $1,500 an acre. So we can't lose money if it goes down, and if it goes up, we make money. I mean, that's a really great way to go to sleep at night. So, you know, we're not comfortable going over 50% of production because we've had a lot of variability in delivering against contracts we want to avoid. But we're comfortable with that. And I think if you're not taking advantage of these prices, you could be passing up a profit opportunity. But at the same time, you really need to talk to, you know, one of these guys or your advisors and make sure you have something built in to protect that upside. And then you can't go wrong. Now, as far as next year, because you were talking about, you know, the long-term strategy, if we get into a wild weather market and this thing does drive, and, you know, I don't know, maybe it goes to $7, maybe it goes to $10. I have no idea. But wherever it is that we are driving emotionally to, I'm sure everybody on this panel is going to say you need to look at locking in 2 years' production, going out to next year, and using some options to protect your equity that way too. The real risk is that everything you guys have talked about, policy changes, you know, Federal Reserve policy, they're going to do things that are going to make this market turn into a down market. Unfortunately, your inputs are going to keep going up, so your profit margins are going to get squeezed. So you're going to have to step out, lock in your revenue, and do what you can to lock in inputs. I mean, I don't know, that's kind of hard to do, but, you know, I'd make a good attempt at it.
Mike Zuzulo, your risk management assessment.
Well, I think the first thing I would look at, Todd, between now and harvest, other than crop prices, is the diesel market. We did see a stocks build this week. It was bigger than what the trade was thinking, and unleaded especially. And so the refined product markets are coming back online nicely. We also heard from OPEC, and they talked about seeing a big bump in second half of 2021 global oil demand. So if you put those two things together, I think one of your biggest risks right now is not locking in your diesel, say by the end of August. You just don't want to be messing with it as you get to the time where everybody's going to need it. So I'm going to be in the next 60 days looking as hard at locking in diesel as I am locking in corn, because they're part of the same revenue per acre. As far as the sales in 21 corn and beans at this point, with about a third to two thirds done, depending on how you did it, I think puts are the only way to go at this stage of the game, especially in the environment we're heading into. And, you know, people kind of get a negative connotation about bought puts because they're not locking in a very good floor price initially. But, you know, if you would have bought a 470 D's put as a just a general example a few weeks back, you can move that up to a 520 put for about 15 cents additional cost. So you can move up your floor price by 50 cents for about 15 cents. That is a lot easier to do than being short the board, and it's a lot easier to do than doing a hedge to arrive, especially with the type of basis fluctuations I think we're going to see, especially in beans this coming fall. So I think Bill hit it on the nose with, you know, I think you really got to sit down with somebody that does this normally and sit down with somebody more frequently. I think one of the things I really try and tell producers right now is expect greater volatility, number one, and number two, elevate your marketing plan to the point where it's as important as what kind of fertilizer application you're doing for side dressing right now. Make it that important right now.
Just to mention, there's two companies right now who have halted any new crop future hedges by farmers. One of them, the CFO, basically shut it down and said, we're not going to do any more. We don't want the margin risk. So I think we're going to see things happen this year that we haven't seen happen.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may listen to the whole of the program anytime you'd like at willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find Commodity Week, the closing market report, information from the agricultural economist, crop scientist, and animal scientist on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois, the United States Department of Agriculture's most recent crop production and world and agricultural supply and demand estimate reports, and much, much more. It's at willag.org. Our thanks go to our panelists this week. They include Bill Biederman from agmarket.net, Andy Wald of producershedge.com, and Mike Zuzulo at globalcomresearch.com. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.